Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you very much for joining us. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News, Kyle Hopkins of the Anchorage Daily News, and Daisha Eaton of APRN. Independent investigator Dan Hensley, former judge, releases his report on the botched Anchorage municipal election. Daisha, let's start with you. What does this report tell us, and what does it tell us specifically that we didn't know before, if anything?
Well, he started off by saying that there's no evidence that Muni employees or any election workers tried to unfairly influence this election. He said that didn't happen, but he blamed two main things. He said it was basically bad management. He blamed the clerk, Barbara Grunstein, and said that she took a hands-off management approach, which was at the bottom of the whole mess. And then he also said there was a deputy clerk that was hired who just didn't have a lot of experience and wasn't getting much direction because of the hands-off management strategy.
Kyle, you've read the report, and you wrote a real interesting story on it. Tell us some more.
I don't think that anyone would be real surprised what they found in the report. If you were hoping that this investigator would come in, and everyone called for an investigation, the city clerk herself called for an investigation, the ACLU, community groups, everyone wanted someone to kind of come in, independent of the assembly, independent of the city, and just take a look at what happened, because clearly something went really wrong. And I think the bottom line in the report is that the problems were caused by this combination of neglect and inexperience. Someone who was running had this very, very important job of running the city elections. In the clerk's office, which is the clerk serves the assembly, but really probably their most important job is to run these elections. And so the person who was kind of given the responsibility to run it hadn't done that much. She'd done a couple of elections, and they were smaller elections, and even one of those, there were some problems. And so then you get this, in hindsight, and the report strikes at this, the idea that, like, in hindsight, you probably should have seen this coming, because you've got this big, contentious election with this with a gay rights issue that's going to bring voters out. You have a mayoral race, so lots of people are going to show up, and then you've got someone who doesn't have experience with that kind of election before. I think what they found was that, you can print as many ballots as you want, but someone has got to have the foresight to kind of know where to put those ballots and get them in the hands of voters, and that didn't happen. And detail some of those reasons why and kind of spins it forward. The report spins it forward a little bit and says, okay, here's some recommendations I make. And that's the important thing now, is just for some really smart public policy making, for people to say, okay, what do we need to change in the voting law, and how do we need to fix, like, the manuals and stuff so that we can kind of dummy proof this whole process so this kind of thing doesn't happen.
And what happened to the conspiracy theory that we heard so much about immediately after the election?
Which one?
Your favorite.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there was
let's try that the voting machines had been jimmied with, or the seals had been broken.
Daisha, maybe you can explain this better. That my reading of the report was that you need to not tell people not to worry when you see a broken seal on those voting machines. But, just real quickly, that kind of, those issues that people maybe were most concerned about, while maybe real concerns, just were not big enough issues to have affected the election, at least. And should be addressed, but we're just not as big a deal as just a lack of planning and some really poor planning.
Yes, I mean, I think they said that the seals were not an issue in this particular election, and there was nothing weird going on. But yes, they should be taken care of in the future for sure.
Steve, what about the Minery emails, which made so much noise for quite a while?
Jim Minery is the head of an activist group that came out in opposition against the gay rights ordinance that was on the ballot and prompted so many more people to come out and cast ballots. And he sent out an email the morning of the election and said, hey, if you're going to vote, but you're not registered, go on out there, register to vote, and they'll give you a ballot, which is way wrong. The deadline was weeks earlier, and you can't do that. So Mr. Hensley in his report said that only about 250 people accounted for going to the polls and saying, I'd like to register and cast a ballot. And he says that was not enough to really impact and cause the kind of chaos that we saw on election day. So it was a factor. It was wrong. Something that Minery said, I didn't realize that, that you couldn't do that. But it did not have a very large impact at all on what happened on that day.
Paul Jenkins, the last word.
Reading the report, watching the hoo-ha since then, government has few legitimate tasks, and one of them, of course, is running a fair and straight-up election. I think we come out of this, we all want to blame the city clerk or the assistant city clerk. It's the assembly. The assembly should have gotten a hold of this thing months ago, and should every year be reviewing exactly what's going on with these elections. And it seems to me in the report, I think, and in the court of public opinion, the assembly is getting off pretty easy.
Okay.
It did say in this report, there was a recommendation said the assembly needs to create something that would evaluate the clerk's performance during these things. So hopefully the assembly will take that up.
Okay. Kyle Hopkins, reality TV finds Alaska irresistible. If you have a grudge and you want to settle it, you can do it on television, or so we're told.
I write a lot about a lot of these kinds of shows, maybe too much. But I kind of
not enough. You're very good at it.
I can't resist it, and these guys can't resist it either. They just, one of the first things I heard, when calling to like producers and at these cable networks and stuff, it's like, why do you keep coming back here? And this was years ago, before, back when it's just State Troopers and just a few, and Deadliest Catch and a few of these shows. They said, once something's successful on TV, you just beat it to death until it fades away, and then you find the next thing. And so so they keep coming back to Alaska. And what was interesting to me about this last one, and this, so recording this on Friday, and like tonight at Coots, there's going to be this casting call for people who want to fight in grudge matches, like at Thursday night fights.
You're mad at your father-in-law, you can settle it.
Yeah, if you're mad at your dad, you can go there and be like, I'm mad at my dad, and I want to fight him in the ring, this Thursday night. And they'll go, find your dad and approach him and say, hey, you want to make $100 on our TV show. But what's interesting about that show is that all these, for the most part, it's always, Alaska is always the hook, right? You'll see Alaska in the title. It's always, the far-flung state and just all these cliches about the state. But it's beautiful. I mean, this is a beautiful state. So, you get that backdrop for kind of some human drama. The cops in Alaska, it's, you can hear these pitches, right?
Are you suggesting here the backdrop could be Hoboken?
Well, that's the thing about this one. It's being filmed in Alaska because Alaska doesn't have a boxing commission. You couldn't film this in LA,
right,
because you could film it here and maybe in Wyoming, because we're one of the only states that would let something like this happen, because we don't have a boxing commission that says, you probably should get trained up before you go and get in the ring.
Well, I think you have to pass a state physical in those
states. Yeah, you should get a medical exam, that kind of thing. And I'm sure the local boxing folks would argue, and they, I think, won a commission, but just have been unsuccessful in getting one. But, long story short, there are no rules in place, so you can just kind of pick someone off the street, go find their girlfriend's ex-husband who they're mad at, and then put them both in the ring and let them
run a little liner on their chest that says hates ex-husband's mother-in-law or whatever.
Yeah, so that's casting.
I have to ask one final question. Do you know what these people are going to get paid? You use the phrase $100, but I thought that might just be a metaphor.
I mean that literally. If you win, you get $400, and if you lose, you get $100.
I see. That's the incentive. Okay. Steve, Mayor Dan Sullivan takes the oath of office in Hawaii.
I just one more comment.
Oh, go ahead.
If you win, you get your own reality TV show.
But this is the same.
No, I'm kidding.
Is the same casting company that cast Flavor of Love season 3.
Yeah. Big.
For the love of Ray J, they do a lot of stuff on VH1. So if you're, if you put on a good fight, you might spin get your own show.
I'm sorry, Michael.
How to get discovered. Okay, no, Steve, that's great. Mayor Sullivan takes the oath of office by Skype from Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
What's this all about?
He's going to run the city by Skype from Hawaii from now on. That's the new reality.
Is this
no, he had a family reunion in Honolulu, and his wife, Lynette, has family down there. So it was one of those things that they had planned for quite some time. The election city regulations say that the new mayor has to be sworn in by July 1st or someplace around in that neighborhood. He's going to be there, lucky him, until about the 16th or so of the month. So he decided to get it done via Skype. Technology is there. They had the judge from Anchorage, took the oath, had some his family gathered around, got a chance to see the moment, and the media looked on as he took the oath.
I was wondering, could this be considered bad form?
Just rubbing it in, because it was like a 30-degree difference between Anchorage and Honolulu, so that was probably the only thing. No, I don't think so. It's certainly a little unorthodox. Yeah, it was something different we've never had. I don't think it's anything to really get upset about. I think if it was his first election, he had just been elected, first term mayor, I think, yeah, that's bad. You got to be here. You got to tell people what your administration's going to be about. You've got to set the tone for the upcoming 3 years that you're going to be in office at least. But he's been around for 3 years. Kind of know what's going to happen.
And Paul, I'm going to throw something in here for you. I wonder if this is Mayor Sullivan telling us I'm not running for another office, because this seemed to me the kind of thing that opponents can just use against you again and again and again, and turning it into a commercial.
They'll beat him like it's a dead chicken. It's just not. This was not a good thing for him to do, I don't think. From a political point of view, what it says is I'm more important than the office, and I really don't have to do what everybody else. It's a Palin move. I'm not going to live in the mansion. I'm going to live in Wasilla. I mean, it didn't play well.
Okay, once again, I'm Michael Carey. I'm here with Paul Jenkins, Steve McDonald, Kyle Hopkins, and Daisha Eaton. Daisha, another police shooting. A police officer was involved in the shooting yesterday of a suspect who was speeding and ran away. And there's a lot of concern in the community as a whole, especially in several minority communities.
Right, and I believe that was a state trooper shooting on the evening of the 4th of July.
Okay, the story came out yesterday.
Yes, and that person was wounded, but lived. But yeah, there have been quite a few police shootings. I guess the APD has been involved in three. Mm-hmm. Two were fatal this year so far. Total, there have been seven around the state, including troopers. So there's a lot of concern, especially in the Polynesian community. The man who was shot on the 9th of June, who was killed, he was Samoan, and so
that's the broom handle man. Pardon my shorthand.
Yes, he was. He had a stick or a broom handle. There's different reports. He had some piece of wood in his hand and was coming at the police officer, and didn't stop. And there was a bystander there as well, and the police officer shot him, and he was killed. So they're holding a rally, the Polynesian community, over at the Far North Bicentennial Park on Saturday at noon, to ask police to consider changing their policy of shooting to kill in situations like this. I talked to the APD about it, and they said, listen, when people's lives are at risk, we are shooting to stop someone. And obviously, the police officer felt that his life was threatened, and there was a bystander whose life was threatened. Polynesian community is saying there's got to be a better way to handle this. Could they have used a taser? Could they have, used reason? none of us were there. It's hard for us to say. This did go before a law enforcement panel or board of some kind, which ruled that, the officer did the right thing. At least at this point, there's a conversation happening. It sounds like there is a meeting today happening with representatives of the mayor's office and with the APD officials, including Chief Mew. And the rally will be held Saturday at noon, and I believe some officials will be there as well.
To discuss with members of the community.
Yes.
Okay. Paul Jenkins, the U.S. Supreme Court rejects the Stolen Valor Act. And on a 6-3 vote, Alaska is a state that has the most veterans per capita.
65,000.
And I wanted to ask you, as a veteran and as a member of the community, what you thought of the Supreme Court's decision in this case?
Well, it's like a lot of U.S. Supreme Court decisions. They're despicable, but I understand them. The Supreme Court has stood up for, Hustler magazine. It stood up for the Baptist church that protests military funerals.
Westboro Baptist Church.
Flag burning. All those decisions are correct. They're painful. I think anyone who would claim to be a decorated veteran from any war is despicable. But there's no law against being despicable. If you want to be despicable, feel free. And I think that it's under freedom of speech. I think the court did the right thing. They left, in the opinion, the chance to make the law, which they said was overbroad, more narrowly focused. Oh, I don't see how you could do that, actually. But it's one of those things. They did it. It's right, but you can't like it.
Well, the other part of it was the court suggested, well, not the court, but the proponents of the legislation, who are from California, and the original offender in this case was from California and was running for office there, that if you could show that the individual, in this case a political candidate, was going to be obtaining a tangible benefit from it, but it seemed to me that was pretty amorphous of what
it
that
is
would
pretty,
be.
It is amorphous. When they said it was overly broad, the reasons it was overly broad were amorphous, and then when they say, well, you can focus more narrowly here, and you look at that and think, well, how do you do that? How do you show that there was a direct, and I mean direct, not indirect, direct legitimate benefit from claiming you're the Medal of Honor winner, for instance, and you're running for office. To me, the connection is clear, but apparently not for the court.
Kyle, there's an interesting free speech question here, or just an interesting speech question here, and that is, with this ruling, has the court cut out a corner of free speech that allows people to lie? Or says that lying is protected?
That's a good question. I reacted to this just in terms of like day to day, you know, just my day to day job was, it strikes at something that you come up with, especially like this time of year. Like this is the time when reporters would be vetting, or like they'd be looking at who's running for office, and they'd be, you know, you're looking at matchups. Okay, who are we going to write about, and who are these people? A lot of times, you know, someone just pops out of the woodwork that maybe they've been a longtime businessman. You don't really know much about them. So now, this is the time when you're kind of looking at their records. And often they'll say, you know, and often they'll really dial up, you know, if they have military service, they'll really dial that up. And at what point, and sometimes cross the line, you know, sometimes they'll be a little misleading about, you know, what their record was, what their military record was, even whether they actually served in a branch of the military or, you know, were in like ROTC or something like that. And it's always made me really hungry for just an easy way to verify that, you know, like, you know, some kind of clearinghouse for that information. And you'd think that you could just call the Department of Defense and learn that. But, you know, there's a lot of people who've served in a lot of different military branches over the years. And so it's not that accessible. So I've always been hungry for just like some kind of database or clearinghouse that would just kind of, you know, make it easy to check, you know, okay, so-and-so did serve. You know, they are a Vietnam vet, and here's the years that they served.
I have sent away from time to time four records, military records, and I've gotten them, but frequently it takes the kind of time that a journalist rarely has, especially an election campaign.
Yeah, it's not a deadline process, and it's not even really like a 1 or 2 week process. It's a prolonged process that, you know, you're... And it comes back to bite you sometimes. I mean, you want to mistrust somebody when they tell you that they served in the military, but you want some record of that. And people do, you know, they do lie about it sometimes, and they get caught.
Steve, I wanted to turn to you. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking that for the press, one of the things that the controversy over the Stolen Valor Act has done, has people are in the press are just going to pay more attention when somebody says,
you're absolutely,
you know,
right,
a veteran who served in some particular theater, or
that's right,
probably not to say veteran honorable discharge, that won't get as much attention as medals or theaters of service, I would think.
Right, I think Kyle's point's right on, too. It does put more pressure, I guess, if you want to call it that, on the media. I think this is something that's balanced out by society. The Supreme Court, as reprehensible as the decision is, it did the right thing, protecting free speech, as Paul says. And hopefully it's the kind of people looking into people's background, the media looking into backgrounds of candidates and what have you. Hopefully that'll balance things out. Society will do that. I think for folks running for president, U.S. Senator, Congress, I think that those are high-profile enough offices where it would be relatively easy to get this, especially in a presidential race. There's going to be more than enough people out there who are going to be able to give information on someone's military background.
On the other hand, what percentage of the American people believe Barack Obama is not a United States citizen?
Yeah.
Is it 14% or 18% or something?
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
And we both know from our experience we've had people who claim to have doctorates or advanced degrees in education or have done a whole variety of things.
Yeah. You, all you can do is put the information out there, you back up the information, and people make up their own minds. But that is true, that even when you put that out there, some folks, it's hard to convince some folks. I think the lower you go in terms of, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way by any stretch, but when you get into city assembly races, mayoral races, I think it will be more difficult to get that kind of information, as Kyle said, to about one's military background. But more high-profile races, governor, for instance, I think you would.
Okay. Steve, let's stick with you. Governor Lisa Murkowski has once again introduced legislation that's addressed at an old battle, and that is the dispute between Alaska and Ohio and the Rose Bowl over what Mount McKinley should be named or what Mount Denali should be named, the name of North America's tallest peak.
Yeah, this goes back to like 1896. William Dickey decided to name Mount McKinley, Denali, he decided to name it Mount McKinley after President William McKinley. And the stories I've heard differ. One is he came off the mountain and heard that McKinley was the president and thought, oh, that's great news, and we'll name this mountain after him. The other one was that
speaking of fairy tales,
right? The other one was, I think this is probably the one that's more embedded in the truth, is that McKinley was a strong believer in the gold system, and this guy was a gold miner, so he said, well, which is a kind of a lame reason to name a giant mountain after somebody, but that's what happened. So ever since then, there's been this debate over whether or not should the thing be called after its Athabascan name, the high one, Denali. More Alaskans obviously prefer that name, but there's a pretty forthright group of folks who have been very diligent over the years in Ohio, again, Congress people who have tried really hard to make sure
that this thing... This would be especially the congressperson from Canton, Ohio.
Canton, yeah, where a high school is named after McKinley, President McKinley, Canton McKinley High School. Good football team there, by the way. But so they already have a high school named after him. But in 1980, there was sort of a what I think everybody hoped would be a compromise. The mountain was Mount McKinley at the time, but it was Mount McKinley National Park. When Anilka came in 1980, it kept the mountain named as Mount McKinley, but it changed the name of Mount McKinley National Park to Denali National Park and Preserve. So everybody thought, okay, well, that's going to be the solemn decision for all of this, and it hasn't. Now Senator Murkowski, she's gone off and she's authored legislation that she hopes will finally once and for all change the name to Denali, and the folks in Ohio can still refer to it as McKinley, but it won't bother us at all.
And all she's got to do is figure out a way to get that through whatever House committee have influence.
There are a couple of representatives who have picked up the gauntlet. That there was another fellow who year after year would sponsor.
Ralph Regular was
right, and he retired here recently. And so there's two other lawmakers now who've picked up the cause.
Thank you, Steve.
Sure.
Desha, a neighborhood group in Muldoon wants a local park as much as 28 acres, but they're running into some pretty significant resistance from the municipality of Anchorage. What's that all about?
So actually there's two community councils over there, and both of them say they want a park. And there's 28 acres. It's where a historic greenhouse used to be historically there. And now it's just this big plot of land and has Chester Creek running through it. And a couple of weeks ago, the assembly voted in a very close vote, 6-5, to reroute Chester Creek. And that's kind of the first step toward moving toward commercial development, which seems to be the direction that the assembly and the mayor's office are moving with this property. And the local folks say, no, we don't really want the creek moved. We want this to be a park. We want to have farmers markets. We want to have a bike path that connects our town. And they argue that Muldoon kind of is the most densely populated area of the city, also very, very diverse, and they need a town center park where people can come together. And they'd like to model their east side district plan in the direction of the way that Spinard has gone. Mm-hmm. They've seen the success that Spinard has had of kind of cleaning up their community, you know, keeping its gritty character, but starting a farmer's market and having more parks in town center areas where people can assemble and get to know each other. So this is ongoing. The East Side District Plan is still in the process, but it looks like it might get kind of heated in the coming months.
And there'll be plenty to report on in the coming months as that story goes. Paul, finally, Governor Parnell says probably no to the expansion of Medicaid under the new Health Care Act. What's that all about?
He's frankly afraid of passing on costs to the state with the expansion of the program. Supreme Court struck down the requirement that it be expanded. In Alaska, they would add 36,000 to the 70-some-odd thousand people already on the program. In 2010, latest numbers I could find, the program was worth $1.3 billion up here. The federal government paid $800, the state paid $400 million. It's gone up since then. It goes up at about 6.8% annually. So what he's trying to do, he understands that the federal government early on in an expansion will pick up most of the cost, as it used to pick up most of the cost in Medicaid.
And probably also understands that the hospitals are going to be coming to see him, right?
Everybody's going to come to see him. You know, the federal government used to pay 60% of Medicaid. That dropped back to 50. I think he's looking down the path and says, well, they're going to do that to it again. We're going to wind up with a giant bill here in about 10 years, and we'll be in a fix.
We're in a fix. We're out of time. Thank you very much for joining us on Alaska Edition.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org. Or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.